that bar.
And if you're just joining us, we're with Farmer Greg. We're on the west side of the house.
Property.
The burn zone, the fry zone. Have you ever tried the egg thing?
No, I haven't actually tried cooking an egg on a sidewalk, but I'm sure it could be done. I'm sure it could be done.
If you like that poached, slightly rare, yeah, that might be an easy method for you.
Yeah. So the western exposure, is it a good place to garden or a bad place to garden?
So you naturally would think bad, but the look
like
in your
the way
eye.
You think. Exactly. So it depends on the time of year. I used to do a garden at the Calico Cow on Central, and they had a western exposure with concrete all the way around it. And it was a garden bed that was 6 feet wide and 60 feet long. And I found out very quickly, I ran it for about 6 years, I found out very quickly that from about May 1st to about October 1st, I couldn't grow anything in there. But from October 1st to May 1st in the wintertime, I could grow everything. So we would actually have tomatoes ready to go in on October 1st. And for you gardeners out there, you know that you generally can't grow tomatoes over the winter here. They overwinter just fine on that nice, warm, hot patio. And she would be harvesting bushels of tomatoes by about Christmas time. So you have to, again,
observe.
Exactly. You got to go out and observe the space and see what you can do with the space. And, you know, a winter garden might be a great place on the west side, but just something to pay attention to. And then there's a southern exposure. Southern exposure gets sun all day. And you probably want to give it some shade in the afternoon if you're planting a garden on a southern exposure. And really the best place to grow is an eastern exposure. An eastern exposure gets sun from sun up until noon. It's the great place for your herbs, for your berries, that's my best garden bed is on the east side of the house. So when you're looking to place your garden, its placement will either spell great success or a great big grand flop.
Now, how much do you go into container gardening at all? Do you ever have like potted stuff you move around?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You should see the front porch at the urban farm. We have, I don't know, 40 pots on the front porch.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and the front porch points east. So it's an eastern exposure. So by about noon or noon 30, it's getting shade. So it's actually a really good place. Our front porch is a great place to grow in pots. The biggest challenge with pots is that the heat will cook them. So you have to make sure that in the summertime, when it's warmer, they're getting more water so that you keep the soil hydrated, and that hydration will also kind of evaporative cooler the space. You also need to make sure that you shade the pots. You know, if you're in a southern or western exposure, that pot itself needs to be shaded. I get this question all the time. Can I put fruit trees in a pot? It depends is what I usually say. And, you know, that's the big thing. If you can find a place in your yard where you can keep the pot shaded 100% of the time and get the tree some sun, you might do pretty well with it.
Which can be kind of counterintuitive to a pot because there's obviously a decorative aspect that you're trying to accomplish with a pot.
There you go. One of the cool things I discovered a few years ago is you take sweet potatoes and you plant sweet potatoes in the pot along with your tree. It has to be a pretty big pot. But sweet potatoes do great here. In fact, I just harvested some out of the urban farm the other day. And they also grow like they're vining. So they'll grow up and over and they'll actually shade the pot for you.
Oh.
Yeah. See? And that came from an observation that I had of how sweet potatoes grow. So really, what I teach is called permaculture. I like to call it the art and science of working with nature. How do we work in the flow of nature rather than against nature? And observation is the single biggest thing that we teach and that you can do.
And from your observation over the years, what's the best watering systems out there?
Oh, watering systems. Well, it depends. you know, if you can get flood water, if you can get flood irrigation like I have at the urban farm, you know, that's stellar. That's absolutely the best if you have a flood irrigated property. Next to that, it depends what you're watering. If you're watering trees and shrubs, bushes, those kinds of things, drip systems are hard on them. You really need a bubbler system because trees and shrubs like to get a lot of water and then they need to dry out in between. So putting a drip system with bubblers on it is, that's a must do if you have a drip system. And I've actually developed this drip ring. It's a ring that's about 18 inches diameter, and we sell them at our pop-up nursery. And each of the emitters, there's 8 or 10 emitters in that ring, and each one puts out a gallon per hour. So you put that ring around your tree, hook it up to your drip system, and then you run your drip system for like 4 hours. And that's a deep water. And then the trees need to dry out in between, you know, a good 10 to 14 days in between watering. So that's the answer to the trees. My favorite one for your gardens is something called drip tape. And the big thing about drip tape is that the system pressurizes fully and then everything gets watered evenly. And we'll talk more about that in the next segment.
In the Outdoor Living Hour with Farmer Greg here at Rosie on the House, your Saturday morning tradition for 30 years.
Yeah.
30 years. We're only a quarter way into this year, and I'm still still need to update my my numbers here. We'll be back right after this.